This is Clusterfucked. Here's your host, Roger King.
It is Clusterfuck time. I'm Roger King. I hope I have another scintillating episode on tap for you. I'm fairly confident that I do. One of the main themes of this podcast for you loyal listeners is to foster a discussion about how Democrats can win in more places all across the country. So I like to check in with people who are organizing and doing great things at the state level. We can't just be talking about the presidential election or Senate races all the time. Democrats have to win everywhere at every level. The organization is Future Now. They operate as a traditional fundraising group, a political action committee trying to get candidates elected, but they don't stop there. They're also an advocacy group helping to get legislation enacted once their candidates are actually elected. He is the co-founder of the Give Smart Project, which raised almost $1 million for state legislative candidates in 2018, and he's the director of research for Future Now, the organization I just mentioned. Aaron Kleinman, a pleasure to welcome you to the Clusterfuck podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Roger. Thanks for having me. And one quick thing there is Future Now Fund is our PAC. Future Now is our general advocacy organization.
Great. Well, perfect segue to what I was going to ask you off the top. I just gave the thumbnail overview there. Maybe you can just sort of start by letting us know the main mission of Future Now. Why do you guys exist and how it came to be? I think it was right after Trump's election. I'm sure that was an inspiring moment, using the word inspiring kind of loosely. But tell us how it all came to be and what you guys really plan to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to take it all the way to the start, are you familiar with the Powell memo?
I don't think I am.
So future Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell, when he was counsel for the Chamber of Commerce, wrote a memo in the early 70s that outlined the fact that conservatives were behind in governmental power, behind liberals. The post-war liberal consensus still reigned, and he wrote a memo on how conservatives could take power in the United States. And there were three major prongs to his approach. One of them was create kind of alternate right-wing media / infiltrate mainstream media. The second is take over the federal judiciary. And the third was to take over state governments.
Right.
Now, there, the first two,
mission accomplished.
It's mission accomplished really on all three. Yeah. If you look in the aftermath of Trump being elected in 2016, it wasn't just the fact that Trump had been elected. It's that Republicans had nearly unprecedented control at the state level.
Right.
There were many states where there's just no Democratic say in the governance of their state. We're focused on reversing that third prong of the Powell memo. Our executive director and one of our co-founders, Daniel Squadron, he's a former New York State senator. He resigned from the New York State Senate to found this group and make this change nationwide because he had seen kind of firsthand how conservative interests were able to take over state legislatures. We're one of many groups that was founded in the wake of the 2016 election and people really seeing just how pervasive the rot in American politics that had been wrought by the conservative right-wing forces had been. Our mission is to change the balance of power in state legislatures so they can focus on improving people's lives instead of focus narrowly on helping special interests.
Right. And you guys, I mean, there were a lot of people asleep at the wheel. And it's kind of well known that during the Obama years, Democrats kind of, forgot about these state races and all of that. But you guys, as I said off the top, you don't just push, help get candidates elected. You kind of follow with them after that in terms of the advocacy and getting their agenda passed, correct?
Absolutely. I see this as an organization that can support anyone who wants to use power in a state legislature to improve people's lives from, when they start thinking about running through the end of their term in office and maybe even beyond. I do think that helps differentiate us from, there are a lot of groups in our space and, you can't, make the desert bloom using only a garden hose. So I welcome all the groups in our space, but I really feel like we've differentiated ourselves from a lot of different ones because we're focused not only on electing Democrats as legislators, but actually helping them govern. And you know, there's one, it's one thing to really focus on helping elect Democrats. And it's really important that we do that. But you also, you know, once you elect them, you need to focus on helping them retain their seats. And how do you help them retain their seats? It's by, you know, kind of empowering them to offer a policy program that, you know, speaks to their constituents and helps improve lives. And, you know, if you can kind of do that, you can keep building on that, because you can't just be focusing on flipping seats every cycle and, you know, kind of churning through legislators. You want to build something more durable, something more fixed. And so we have a, you know, Future Now has a policy platform. It's called America's Goals. Mm-hmm. If anyone wants to go to americasgoals.org, you can check it out. And it has, you know, our seven key policy areas that are, you know, things that everyone should support. Things like, you know, good jobs, clean water, access to healthcare, good schools. And, you know, we provide a framing that, you know, we poll tested it, and it's got overwhelming approval. Something like more than 70% of Americans approve this policy platform. So it can speak to all sorts of different people. You know, like, you know, over 90% of Democrats, like 70% of independents, and even 50% of Republicans will support, you know, these kind of basic things on the government, you know, doing things to improve people's lives. There is a, you know, 25% rump of people who will just never support government intervention no matter what.
Right.
And, you know, that's really who governs right now, the Republican Party in most states. But, you know, hopefully we can kind of move everyone, not just everyone, but Republicans too. We can move people, you know, this is a popular platform that will help you, you know, win election, win re-election, even in the swinging areas. And so, you know, we want to, and then we actually, you know, have goals for to measure states against, you know, so by 2030, we want to make sure that every state has a life expectancy of 84 years. There are policies that you can, that states can implement to help with that. So, you know, we're really providing, you know, we're a mission-based organization that is providing a blueprint for state legislators nationwide to, you know, win election, improve lives, and overall improve the state of the country.
Right. And I mean, of course, one of the things that makes Democrats Democrats is that they actually want government to work, whereas it's not always clear that Republicans do, because their mantra is, of course, less government in people's lives. So sometimes if government doesn't work, or a politician doesn't deliver on his or her promises, it actually works in their favor. So, I mean, I like the idea of this agenda, that it's not just winning the election, but let's govern, let's deliver on what voters say they want, and then it makes re-election easier. Before we kind of dive into maybe some of those issues that you mentioned, you know, on the platform, what's the process of deciding which candidates you're going to get behind, and, you know, which states to focus on, all of that? How do candidates even get on the radar of Future Now?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's a rigorous process that, you know, so for the 2020 cycle, this process started in December 2018. That's when we look at...
Right after the midterm.
Right after the midterm. I mean, basically once election results are certified for the previous election, you start looking at what happens next from an electoral purpose. So you look at kind of the chambers available, you know, that will be up for election in 2020. How many seats are in them, and then, you know, whether, you know, kind of if we focus resources into a state, whether we think that we can meaningfully alter the outcome within that chamber. So from there, we're able to narrow it to the chambers. And then we look at the fundamentals of each district. You know, it's not, you know, we have things like, you know, past electoral history, demographic information, which can also kind of clue you on where it might be headed. Mm-hmm. We have some proprietary metrics internally, nothing particularly groundbreaking, but, you know, things that we think show beyond kind of what's publicly available, kind of how we think a Democrat should do in the district. And we look at all those, you know, the combination of those factors within the chambers that we think we can make a difference in. And those are the seats that we think we can make a difference in. And so then in a state, once a filing deadline passes and we have candidates in those districts, we start interviewing candidates, and then you will actually make endorsements based on, you know, the candidates who, you know, impress us the most in the districts where we need to win, you know, that Democrats would need to win the most in order to make a difference in the balance of power in a chamber.
Is it some combination of potential candidates or candidates reaching out to you, or sometimes do you reach out to candidates? You see someone gets on your radar that you've already kind of done the research maybe on the district, and then you reach out to them, or is it, do both scenarios happen?
Obviously, if a candidate reaches out to us, you know, we're flattered. Mm-hmm. It depends on, you know, the individuals. You know, in some states, they're more likely to come to us than others. So it's both.
So one of the themes I drum home on this podcast, and maybe obvious with the title of it, is the need for liberals, Democrats, progressives to stop clustering. There's literal, of course, where people choose to live, but also figuratively. And, you know, what I mean by that is Democrats, liberals spending too much time talking to people who already agree with them and not spending enough time trying to make the case to those who don't. I say that ad nauseum on here. So when I have a guest like yourself who's involved in races and competing in, you know, red states and, you know, places that aren't necessarily progressive or liberal, I always like to know what issues are potentially getting traction with red state voters. And this probably ties into your platform that you talked about, issues that might get some non-voters off the couch in some of these red places, or even get people who voted Republican, you know, to cross over and vote Democrat. So can you give me some examples of issues that might get traction in certain places and move voters, in places that are not deep blue?
Yeah. So actually, because I work in state legislative races, I never use the term red state because it's a gradients of purple districts more than anything. I mean,
fair enough.
There are districts in Utah that are more liberal than anything you would find in California, or as liberal as I think you find in California.
Right.
I would say in terms of crossover issues, I think the two that we have seen, actually, I'll give you three. There are two that we've historically seen as really powerful across party lines. One of them is clean water. Mm. Everyone wants to not drink poison.
They're weird that way.
Yeah. Banning PFOA and PFOS from drinking water and, you know, forcing polluters to actually pay to clean up based on that. Those are very popular things, popular measures. And there are, water issues, it's not just an urban thing. There are a lot of rural areas that have significant issues with clean water. Mm-hmm. And so we think that's a really winning issue. Another one is broadband. And this is actually, broadband I see as something that you have kind of a turnout thing of it and a persuasion element to broadband. So the persuasion is really increasing rural broadband access. An issue that can really speak to voters in areas that tend to not vote Democratic and to get them to cross over. I don't think everyone appreciates just how bad rural broadband can be, how many dead zones there are in sparsely populated areas, and how improving it can really make a meaningful impact pretty quickly on the quality of someone's life, especially now that we're all sitting inside streaming Netflix all the time.
Right. Absolutely. Now, is that something the Republicans are opposed to?
It is, we're nonpartisan.
Right.
I mentioned, our electoral efforts, obviously, in 2020 are focused, mostly on electing Democrats in seats in states that, are currently held by Republicans. But, in Nebraska, for example, there's, significant Republican support for expanding rural broadband. Mm-hmm. Talking about, something that can get, other voters to turn out in more urban areas, get people off the couch, as you mentioned, allowing for municipal broadband in cities. I mean, you're basically telling people who, you are going to, people who live in a city and saying, I want to make it so that the city can provide broadband instead of a local cable company. Cable companies are the most unpopular industry in America.
Right.
So you can say, I will make it so you can go, you'll have better internet against the company that you hate the most. I think that's a pretty good message. And it's something that, we don't always think about as a partisan issue, as a political issue, but it really can be. And it's something that you can really use to speak to people. And then one thing, I mentioned those two issues. A third one that really seems to be popular across ideologies is protection of personal data online. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And it's something that, it's really more of an issue in Europe, where there are more stringent rules and stringent traditions around protection of people's identities.
Right.
But in the U.S., especially when you go online, there's very little in protection today over, or not very little, but, you know, it's a most, you know, it's not the most robust framework in how the government can use and collect your personal data from going online. The state of California recently passed a law that actually gave people more ability to protect their identities online, and, you know, have more control over the data about them that's used by, you know, various advertising companies online. And we think that is something that, you know, the polls show that this is something that's popular across ideologies. Republicans don't want people going through their browser history as much as Democrats.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are just some of the issues. But we, you know, again, our overall platform, especially in the wake of COVID, we think there's a lot in there that will speak across party lines. Surprise medical bills, for example. There are going to be a lot of people who have extensive interactions with the hospital system for the first time because of COVID, and there are going to be a lot of surprise medical bills. And so, you know, that's, you know, a prophylaxis against that would be really popular. Also, fair districts is another thing that, you know, popular across party lines.
Yeah, voting rights and...
Yeah, so we think there's a whole slew of issues that can really speak, you know, to everyone who's really interested in a government that works for the people. Again, there's something like 25% of people really think the government should just stay out of everything.
Right.
But for everyone else, a supermajority of Americans, there are plenty of issues that you can run on.
So when you said you're nonpartisan, I've been assuming like you support Democratic candidates, but is the nonpartisan part of it on the advocacy side? Like, just need a clarification there exactly.
Yeah. So we're not affiliated with the Democratic Party.
Right.
We, you know, our advocacy group, obviously, as a nonprofit, is not involved in partisan politics. Our PAC, you know, obviously in the 2020 cycle, we are supporting Democrats across our target states.
Right.
But, you know, I always want to leave open the idea of a future where there are Republicans, you know, in significant numbers nationwide. Working for, we think our policy platform, like I said, could speak to everyone.
Right, as long if they were willing to support what, you know, some of those policies you mentioned, you're all on board with someone who might be running, yeah, for the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would depend on the state and the context of it. I mean, you know, 2020, the context of it is, you know, we're running against a Republican Party that's run by Donald Trump,
right,
where almost all the elected officials, you know, have shown some degree of fealty to him. And so there's little room electorally to really cross endorse.
Yep.
Donald Trump won't be here forever. I know that's kind of hard for people to wrap their minds around. And I want, you know, as an eternal optimist, I want to leave open the possibility that after Trump leaves, there might be a new generation of Republicans, especially in areas that are traditionally dominated by Republicans and where the real political fights happen within the Republican Party, that might want, you know, kind of a reform Republican movement, hopefully,
yeah,
where they would want to support a policy platform that is focused on improving the lives of the people who live in their districts. And so I want to leave that open.
Well, that fits in well with this podcast in the spirit of, you know, like I said earlier, talking to people who don't always agree with you and keeping open to finding common ground and all of that, which I think us on the left side of the aisle need to do more of for sure. So I think when people talk to, interviewers like me talk to people like doing the work that you are doing, there's this tendency still to want to hear like, oh, tell us about a big race or something that we would have heard of or something that's on the national radar or whatever. But I actually want to know a couple of examples of races you've gotten involved in already, maybe the last cycle or this cycle, doesn't matter, that are maybe lower profile but will have a big impact if your candidate already won or will win. You know, people don't realize sometimes on some of these legislative races how important they are. That's all part of your, you know, I think the PR campaign that you guys are, you know, a big part of, you know, convincing more voters they have to pay attention to this stuff. So can you think of a couple of examples of these kinds of races that will have a big impact on a state that maybe people don't realize?
Well, you know, I think looking at our greatest success stories, I think the first would be, I think of Maine and Virginia. And we helped with the state Senate in Maine and the House of Delegates in Virginia. Hmm. And to me, the success stories is what happened in both of those states since that. In Maine, Democrats, you know, thanks in part to our help in flipping the state Senate, Democrats achieved the trifecta, and they've really been focused on really driving down healthcare costs for their citizens, things like, you know, insulin and prescription drugs and things like that. And, you know, Maine as a state is one of our older states. And so you can see there, just especially now that the pandemic is upon us, they've put in all this great work in making sure that people have access to healthcare, mm-hmm. especially the most vulnerable to this pandemic. And, you know, I really feel like our work in Maine really just helped that, you know, it's helping, you know, health outcomes, helping save lives.
Yes.
So I'm really proud of everything we did there. And then in Virginia, you know, that's really the big example because it flipped just last year in 2019.
Right.
And, you know, since then, there's been just this slew of activity around, you know, justice issues there, you know, around, you know, especially, you know, there's redistricting reform there, maybe not in the form that we would prefer, but there's no more, you know, legislators don't draw their own districts anymore in Virginia. There are things around mass incarceration in Virginia. And so you can see in Maine and Virginia, you know, what can happen when you focus on flipping legislatures, just how much it can improve people's lives in that state and how powerful that is. And really how, you know, inexpensive it is. I mean, these races cost a fraction of, you know, not just presidential, but Senate, House. You know, so an average person who wants to make a difference, the states are where you can make the biggest difference. Giving $20 to Joe Biden doesn't really do much. Giving $20 to one of the candidates that we've endorsed going into 2020 makes a difference for that campaign.
Yeah, I swear I didn't send you the questions ahead of time, but you've just segued into what I was about to ask you, which was, how is the climate on the fundraising side? I mean, you've always got the tough battle during an election year to get people to focus on the down ballot stuff and state races when everyone's obsessed with, you know, getting rid of Trump, understandably. So there's that challenge. And now, you know, you've got the pandemic as well. What's your pitch to people to still get them to focus a bit and give to some of these races?
So I've been actually, so to answer the first part of your question, I have been pleasantly surprised at how we've been able to keep up fundraising during the pandemic.
Great.
You know, I think as an organization, you know, I'm really happy to be part of Future Now. And as an organization, we've built up, there are these things called giving circles, where basically groups of concerned citizens get together and dedicate themselves and their social groups to, you know, raising money to help flip a state legislative chamber. And, you know, I've been in their meetings and there are people like tearing up, talking about all the, you know, especially like with Maine, for example, there are people tearing up talking about all the great work that they've been able to do together. And so if you're out there listening to this and you want to make a difference, I'd suggest checking out futurenow.org and looking up creating a giving circle and our giving circles, you know, because they're kind of a social thing, because, you know, there are benefits to kind of people, you know, still feeling like they're all in this together. Maybe someone's going through tough economic times, someone else can help pick up the slack. So I've been really impressed by all of our giving circles and all, you know, how they've been able to raise a lot of money and stay on track even during the pandemic. And as for the second part of your question, you know, what's the pitch? I mean, you know, again, it's part of what I said before. You know, it's just, it's so, you know, your money goes further in these state legislative races than it does anywhere else. You know, giving to, you know, whoever's running against Mitch McConnell might make you feel good. It might give you an endorphin rush. It's not going to make much of a difference.
Right.
You know, but giving that money, you know, so for example, in 2018, before I joined Future Now, I helped co-found GiveSmart with Sean McElwee. And, you know, we gave to a bunch of different candidates. And we heard from, you know, a bunch of them. And they were like, and I told this to our list of donors. It's like, you were the difference between a win and a loss in our district. Because of that money, we were able to hire an additional canvasser. And when election results came in, the neighborhood that they hit was much better than we thought.
Right.
And there are so many stories like that across the country. And if you want to donate to state legislative races, you'll be able to get that story. You're not going to be able to get that story, that minute detail on how your donation helped, if you donate to the presidential or a senator or even a House candidate. But for state legislative candidates, you can trace kind of how your donations can make a big difference.
Yeah, more bang for your buck. And, you know, sort of what you said earlier about your success in Maine, for example. Now, that is a state that's key, you know, in the general election. There's four electoral votes. And, you know, Trump actually picked up one last time. And so now you've got government that's working better in Maine for the people, which is great for the Democratic brand, which, of course, will also help in the race against Susan Collins. So starting, you know, it's that grassroots thing where you start at the local or state level, and then it, you know, it bubbles up and helps you know, the bigger races. So before I let you go, so election night 2020, how do we know if Future Now has been successful? What should we watch for? Any couple of races you can key us in on? I mean, of course, everyone's going to be focused on Trump and whether he lost and all that. But the next day, when we're looking at all the results, what should we look for?
Well, actually, and just, you know, it might be next week because of all the absentee ballots coming in. And, you know, it might take a while to process all those.
Right.
So what I'm telling people that, you know, it's like, I, you know, mentally it's going to be tough for a lot of people who really care about the future of this country, but you might have to wait a few days to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
But you know, in the subsequent weeks, what, you know, how do you know, I mean, I would say the two states where I really feel like, you know, if we are like, I mean, you know, all of our states, I feel like are you know, there we have achievable goals in all of them, but the two that I have looked at recently that I just really am fixated on, it's Michigan and Iowa. In both states, we only need to flip three seats in the state house to, you know, basically break the Republican power, and you know, it really kind of, and then the COVID pandemic has really crystallized the importance of both of those to me. In Michigan, you literally have gunmen roaming the halls of the Capitol.
Yeah.
Anti-government, I mean, militias. It's insane. And the, you know, Republican legislative leaders are, you know, kind of tacitly approve or not so tacitly approve of this.
Yeah.
There might be nominees who were, you know, actually toting guns at these protests in, you know, running against people that we've endorsed.
Right.
And so to me, Michigan, you know, it really is important that we have a strong showing in Michigan and flip the state house there. And then Iowa is another state that really has been hit hard by the pandemic. Their governor really almost took no, she's a Republican. She took almost no action to protect the state. And there have been a bunch of outbreaks at meatpacking plants there that are now spreading across the state. And, you know, looking at the list of candidates there, one of them, her name is Kayla Coder. She was a GiveSmart endorsee in 2018. She lost by 9 votes.
Oh, wow.
And that was because Republicans, a Republican-controlled panel wouldn't count or even open, I think it was 25 ballots that were sent but didn't have postmarks on them but were received. Mm. And so it's really personal to me that we put that seat.
Right.
And it's really, but also, you know, flipping the Iowa House in general. So I would say I will be, listen, I care about state legislatures. I look at state legislative races all day. Obviously, I care a tremendous amount over whether we get rid of Donald Trump.
Right.
But beyond that, Iowa and Michigan are the two states that, for me, if we flip those chambers, it will be a good night for, I will feel really good about the work that we've been doing. And, but, you know, again, already with Maine and Virginia, I feel good about the work we've done already. So there's just so much, there's so many great things that we can accomplish, you know, one state at a time. And I'm excited that, you know, people are getting excited about state legislators.
Absolutely. And those are two key states in at every level, Iowa and Michigan. You know, Michigan's my home state. Obviously, there's a Senate race there, too. And again, having these good candidates out there knocking on doors always helps the party as a whole and obviously helps your races. So keep up the good work. Maybe we'll check in with you again later in the year, see how things are going. But the organization is Future Now, futurenow.org. Maybe think about throwing them some bucks. Look at those giving circles.
That's right.
Aaron Kleiman, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Roger.
All right. Aaron Kleiman from Future Now. They're at futurenow.org, as I said. And if you want to follow Aaron on Twitter, he's got a good following and he always has some interesting things to say. He's got kind of a funny, I guess, pseudonym, Maynard G. Muskie Vote is who he is, but his handle is @BobbyBigWheel. @BobbyBigWheel. That's where you can find Aaron on Twitter. I think @FutureNow is also their Twitter handle. I'm on Twitter as well. The Civil Liberal is my moniker, but the handle is at CF the podcast. So follow me there and don't miss a single inspiring tweet. If you want to listen to other episodes of this fine podcast, the place to be is cfthepodcast.com. All the episodes are there, plus other information about the program, cfthepodcast.com. Join our mailing list. Why not? It's free. We will not bombard you with unnecessary information. Just information about the podcast, when we release new episodes and all of that. Cfthepodcast.com. Click on join the mailing list. I think it takes about 30 seconds to fill out the form. We always appreciate hearing from you. And this podcast is available on many other platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all of your favorite pod catchers, as they call them. But we love it when you visit the website too, cfthepodcast.com. You can listen there. But wherever you listen, the important thing is that you are listening. And of course, we are on Facebook as well. Just do a search for CF the Podcast. You'll find the page, like it, and we post the episodes there. But not just the episodes, other information, articles, discussion about all things to do with Democrats, particularly in the red states and how we can win more elections. This episode was recorded, as always, with the fine folks at dbaudio.ca. We appreciate their work. And on that note, there is a place to support the podcast when you go to cfthepodcast.com. We do have the expenses like the fine studio, like some marketing, like web hosting and audio hosting and all that stuff. So if you're feeling generous and you love this podcast, why wouldn't you support it? We appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
The Clusterfucked Podcast, a liberal host with red state guests.
I'm Roger King. That'll be all.